Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
And we're joined tonight by Fiona, who runs the Prospective Lesbian Parents Victoria group with her partner. And they also have a young son who I think is 16, 17 weeks now. So, Fiona, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Welcome.
Can you just tell us a little bit about your background and the work that PLP does?
Sure. Basically, I've been involved with facilitating PLP. This is my third year now. And PLP has been running since about 2004, I believe. So it's been a fairly long-standing support group. We run monthly meetings where same-sex attracted women, whether they be singles, couples, can come along and in a safe, confidential environment talk about issues relating to conception, preconception, and issues, you know, post-birth and things like that.
Now, how's life for you at the moment? You are a new mum. How's that going for yourself?
Challenging,
and your partner?
Very challenging. It's wonderful, but look, nobody prepares you for parenthood. I don't think There's so many different challenges. I mean, everyone talks about the sleep deprivation. I think I'm coping pretty well. I think when you're breastfeeding that you get all those happy hormones. My poor partner Kate.
Stick them on the boob and fall asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been there, done that.
Yeah.
My poor partner Kate, I think she suffers a little bit more with the sleep deprivation than I do. But then I always could fall asleep fairly well beforehand, let alone being exhausted. So, and I'm back at work. I'm self-employed as well. So, you know, there's the challenges of working and looking after him. And so... But, yeah, it's one look at that face and one look at that big toothless cheesy grin and you just melt and you go, yeah, it's so worth it.
I love that toothless cheesy grin. I don't think I've ever heard anybody describe their child like that, but I'm loving it and I'm going to use it. I'm definitely going to use that one.
Yeah.
What sort of, in terms of the process that you and your partner went through, what sort of challenges did you face?
We had an interesting journey to becoming pregnant and conceiving Henry. We initially started out with a known donor. That was kind of a fortuitous by chance meeting a colleague when I was working, suggested that her heterosexual partner could, you know, donate for
that's
us.
So nice.
It was just one of those random coincidentals. It never happens, you know.
Yeah.
Pot of gold at the end of the rainbow kind of things. And so we were quite excited. So we thought, great, we'll go down that road. And unfortunately, we had four tries and two miscarriages.
Okay.
And then we actually happened to meet his mother. At a Thermomix party, as you do, just a random thing.
The Thermomix party.
And although she was lovely, she was very much all about her son was God's gift to the planet and he was just it in a bit and so were her grandchildren. And the law, the way that it is when you have a known donor, anyone who has a vested interest in the child can apply to the family courts for access.
Ooh.
And that kind of... did scare us a little bit. And so then we considered then going the anonymous donor route.
Yep.
And we sort of thought, you know, obviously things happen for a reason, you know, our journey wasn't meant to go down that road. So then we weighed up the pros and cons of going through a local clinic in Melbourne versus an interstate clinic. And for personal reasons, we weighed up, you know, what our options were. So Kate and I decided to go through Queensland Fertility Group. And that was a bit of a journey in itself. So we started that process in August and it was like an unfortunate series of events. You know, part and parcel was, you know, me having a Looney Tunes style fall in my kitchen, fracturing my bum bone.
hang on, was this was before the insemination?
This was before the insemination. So, right. Like, trying to lead up to this process.
And you're
like,
preparing yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, that was kind of a story in itself where, you know, the cat was on the kitchen bench and I went to, you know, throw a glass of water at the cat to discourage it from being on the bench and I slipped in the water, which is karma.
Mm. Karma. Total karma. And they know it.
They do. They do. So, yeah, so I fractured my coccyx. So we needed to give time for that to heal because when you're pregnant, that's an injury you don't want.
Definitely.
So then eventually, you know, then the gynecologist had a month off on holidays and then anyway, long story short, we eventually got back up to Queensland to try and we got pregnant first go at IUI.
Fantastic.
Which is in utero insemination. So for us, it was a really, really long time for something that happened in the end quite quickly.
So just to explain to some of the listeners who might not fully understand the process of IUI, so it's intrauterine insemination.
That's right.
So we, like, a lot of people kind of technically know it as turkey basting, but it's a bit of a step further than turkey basting, isn't it?
Locally
known as turkey basting, cool. But turkey basting is the kind of first effort, isn't it, where you literally get a turkey baster.
You can use a turkey baster, but there's much more efficient methods.
Oh, yeah, getting it right up there, through the cervix.
You don't want to get it through your cervix. So that's actually a common misnomer. So with IUI, you actually do get it through the cervix. So it's done with washed semen.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah, lovely. Sorry, talking about num-num. Warning. Sort of should have had a warning there. We're going to be talking gross, icky bits right now. IUI is done with washed semen.
Yep.
So it can be put through the cervix into the uterus.
Yep.
And then basically it gives the sperm a head start.
A better chance of getting
better
up
chance.
There.
Yeah. So
plus the washed sperm, and just for those of you who don't know what that really means, when
the
process of washing sperm is they basically get rid of all the two-headed ones, the two-tailed ones, the ones that are running around in circles, and they get the strong ones, don't they?
They put it in a centrifuge, so, and they actually separate the semen from the sperm.
Lovely.
And they put it into a different medium, and you get a little vial or a straw or whatever your clinic decides to call it, and they use a really weird looking syringe, and you know, it's
in
very
it goes.
Romantic and
very romantic.
But it's all very quick, very painless. So 5 minutes and, oh, right, we're done. Good-o.
So the candles are on.
Absolutely.
Your girlfriend's beside you giving you a little smooch while the doctor's having a go.
Our fertility specialist, she was great. She was really, really good. So I think she might be one of the girls as well. So.
Yeah.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
So Fiona, I want to know, of course, a little bit more about what PLP does, and tell us a little bit about what types of resources and support you give to people.
Sure. So we run, like I said before, we run monthly meetings, which is held on the third Tuesday of every month, and we cover a range of topics. So we kind of alternate between guest speakers and sessions that I run. So we have a lawyer usually come as a guest speaker. We have births, deaths and marriages. We also have one of the fertility clinics come and speak as well. That's always a really popular session. Some of the sessions that I run is a do-it-yourself to home insemination, which is always fun and lots of gory details.
We talked a lot about that before the show a little bit and
brilliant.
Had a few giggles.
Brilliant gory details.
And Louise is very keen on this. Yeah. I think she'll be coming along to the next one.
I sound like a spot squeezer. I'm not. But the gory details about surrounding fertility are actually really interesting.
Well, that's the thing that often people want to know about. That's the stuff that you quite often can't find information on. It's literally the logistics. How? What do you use? What's going to give you a better, there's no guarantees, but what's going to give you perhaps an easier or better result, or what's going to be less fiddly and icky? Because
Do you need to do in advance as well? Because you need to time it really, really well.
So many women don't know about their cycles.
No.
They don't know that, you know, things happen in patterns. They don't know about ovulation. Like, knowing when to inseminate is just as important as how to inseminate.
Yeah.
So, you know, we go through all those sorts of topics as well.
And the thing is as well, it's such a beautiful process, the monthly cycle. If you actually dig into it and research it, it's amazing and it's so predictable as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, that this is why women are all crazy.
Yes.
Because our hormones, honestly, they just go nuts every month.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, you're crazy. You're crazy, Barbara. You just don't want to say it. But no, it's true, though. And we are totally totally defined by our hormones and our monthly cycle. And it is quite a wonderful thing when you do a bit of research.
Absolutely.
On it.
Oh, look, I'm a big fan of the mucus.
That's good old cervical mucus.
Absolutely. You know, get in touch with your inner mucus, I always say.
So PLP. So what kind of people do you get showing up? Is it all same-sex attracted people, or do some heterosexual people show up as well?
Sometimes we get donors, but we kind of ask people to let us know when they're bringing donors, because, you know, we like it to be an environment where people feel like they can share and ask questions. Mm-hmm. So there's certain sessions where it's absolutely appropriate to bring donors, like, for example, this month's session, we're inviting support people. So it's an opportunity to perhaps bring grandparents, parents, donors, people that are in your support network that want to ask questions, are a little bit afraid to either ask because they don't want to get that graphic with, you know, or they're asking inappropriate questions and you just want to bring them along so someone else can answer them for you.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do that sort of stuff.
Which is kind of good because it's inclusive, right? It's
absolutely. Absolutely. No, we're not exclusive at all. So,
And I think that group of people is quite an important one for somebody who, like, starts this journey.
Yes.
And, Because we're sort of crossing that a little bit that, for some people it might work straight away. For other people it might not.
Yeah.
Some people try for years.
Yeah.
I can imagine it's quite difficult to decide who you talk to in that phase.
Absolutely.
Or not, because you don't. Or I don't only know from people that when they tell you they're pregnant, that's usually a while in, you know, because you never know what happens, might go wrong. So you don't tell the world straight away. So
I think too, you know, there's always that I know Kate and I had that issue of being so excited that you're trying to make a baby and wanting to tell people. And we did tell some people early on. And then when we went through the process of having two miscarriages, it's heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And everyone, like, you read the blogs and all that sort of stuff, and everyone says, you know, don't tell people until you've passed that safe mark. And until you actually go through that process, I think, of having a miscarriage, you don't actually acutely realise how much that can affect you. Mm. You know, but then again, depending on your support network, some people can then rally around you.
Mm. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, really, isn't it?
It is a double-edged sword. It really does depend on your support network, I think.
Because if you don't tell anybody, you have to kind of suffer it yourself and your partner, so you don't have any support then?
It depends on your support group.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got some friends of going, so you're pregnant yet? You're pregnant yet? Mm. Hey, not helpful.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you've got other people that just are there. And I think they're the kind of support people that you need, that wait for you to open up and to invite you in and to talk about those issues that are meaningful to you and to just be there.
And of course, heterosexual couples go through this as well.
Absolutely.
Who go through
do.
IVF.
Absolutely.
So it's pretty much the same thing for those guys too.
Yeah.
Do you find that women who are in same-sex relationships, do they, like, are you less likely to have within your, you know, sort of friendship groups, people who've, you know, shared these similar experiences? Like, I know, most of my gay friends, for example, don't have babies, haven't started families, versus all of my straight, not all of them, but a lot of my, all the straight friends that I grew up with, now we're like in our mid-30s, they all have kids. So it's kind of a different, like, you find yourself often, I think, in a totally different social sort of context in terms of that support.
Absolutely. I think I've definitely found that. I mean, even with new mums groups, I haven't really clicked with the new mums groups that's in our area. And I've sort of found that, not that any of them said anything nasty or anything like that. You know, sometimes you just feel a welcoming vibe and sometimes you don't. And, you know, with the new mums group in our area, I definitely haven't felt that connection, that ability to identify with that group.
So are you the only same-sex mum?
Yeah, in that area I am, yeah.
You know what, maybe it's just a little bit about, and I know we shouldn't have to educate, but maybe it is just a bit about that, you know, and it's about familiarity as well.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe it'll just take a bit of time and perseverance.
Oh, yeah, potentially. I mean, doing PLP, I love having that. People are sort of pretty much all on that same page. They're either going through the process or they're thinking about going through the process. They're there for information, or, you know, so you're surrounded by people that understand, as opposed to, you know, a group of mums sitting around whinging about how little their husbands do. Well, you know, I don't have that. I have a wonderful partner who does amazing things, and, you know, hell yes, two mums are better than one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. You don't even have to ask, which is awesome, you know. Like, you can just give a look and it's like, hey, no, I'll cook dinner.
Hang on. That's not even about kids. That's like housework as well.
Absolutely.
Having a female partner is brilliant. You just don't have to ask.
That's it.
It's just done.
There's no toilet seat left up. It's great.
Yeah. The advantages of having a girlfriend, everybody.
Now, I don't think we've actually read out the website yet. So it's plpvic.com that people can go to. And you've got a Facebook group as well, which is a private group.
Yes.
But people can see it to request to become part of that group, which I think is great because, again, like if people want to post and ask questions, they know that they're part of a...
That's right.
You know, a safe community.
We're pretty particular about that, and we're pretty particular about in the group about maintaining confidentiality. It really is about having that safe space. And the main area where we communicate for PLP is via the Facebook page, and it is private, so that if people post and they're not telling their friends that they're trying to conceive, then they don't have to worry about it coming up in people's news feeds. So.
And you've already mentioned your next event coming up for... like people bringing support people along. So that's in July. Some of your other events between now and the end of the year: natural options to enhance your fertility, birthing options, resilient rainbow kids, and then finish off with a dinner, a bit of a social event in November.
Yes.
So there's plenty. I mean, for people, you know, thinking of starting a family or who may already have young kids, get involved with the group.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
It is Joy 94.9, and you're listening to her voice with four beautiful beauties in the room, and we are talking all things babies and jizz and cervical mucus. So basically, close your ears if you're squeamish, because you probably won't want to go any further. Anyway, so we got to a little
can
bit.
Can I close my ears?
You can close your ears.
Information overload.
Semen. So we've talked a little bit about PLP and giving women support when they're embarking on this journey, which is, you know, it's not an easy journey. You know, when you're in a heterosexual relationship, it's on tap.
Yes.
You can do it whenever you want. You can do it a million times a day when you're ovulating, and, you know, one of the days you're going to get lucky. But, you know, as a lesbian couple, you've got a few shots to do it. And I guess one of the things we should talk about are the different types of processes that are available to us, because there are several ones. There's the IUI, which we've just discussed. And then, you know, if that's unsuccessful, there is the potential to go forward with IVF. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about, you know, how maybe Medicare funding can help with that and various other things. So after IUI, if IUI is unsuccessful, say we, you know, you try a few times with IUI and it's not, because, you know, it's not going to be completely cheap to do it.
No, it's
a little bit of money.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, you only want to give it a few goes before you want to take the next step, right? Yes.
Well, some clinics say that you have to do IUI before doing IVF in order to get the Medicare rebate. Mm-hmm. With lesbian couples, quite often we're classed as socially infertile as opposed to medically infertile. And in order to get the Medicare rebates, you have to be medically infertile. So if you do, it depends on the clinic, but you might have to do two or three IUI inseminations to then be classed as medically infertile.
Which I guess is fair, right?
Yes. You'd think so. Yeah. I mean, it's difficult. You know, look, there's arguments for and against. I think it's a medical procedure, and, you know, there's a lot more money spent on perhaps things that aren't necessarily...
Yeah.
appropriate as well. So I think that the more help that we can get, the better.
Okay.
So but in terms of getting rebates, it does vary from state to state. It depends on your fertility specialist. So you might have an underlying condition like PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, which means that you might get the rebate right off the bat.
Yeah.
So then you
or endometriosis or
exactly,
something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it just depending on, it really does depend on your fertility specialist as to what they class you as. So it's actually them that class you whether you're medically infertile or not, and whether you can get the rebates. So, I mean, you know, prices vary. One of the reasons that Kate and I decided to go to Queensland was that Queensland and New South Wales and Tasmania import international donors.
Okay.
So there's pros and cons to that as well. So with international donors, there's a wider selection that you can choose from. Whereas in Victoria, they have to be Victorian donors that have gone through the process of having Victorian counselling. So you've got a much smaller donor pool.
And it's quite involved for donors as well, isn't it? Like they have to go through quite a hefty...
They do.
A hefty process. So they really need to be very altruistic in what they're doing and really, really believe in what they're doing and that they're helping people, which I guess is a good thing.
It is.
But it means that the pool is smaller for people to choose from.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the parts that, you know, people quite often don't like to talk about, but, you know, donors can object to donating their semen to same-sex couples.
Mm-hmm.
So some clinics can have separate lists. So, and they'll have separate lists. They'll have an IUI list and an IVF list. With IVF, the sperm quality doesn't have to be anywhere near as good. So,
yeah.
Whereas IUI, they have to be magic swimmers.
Yep.
To be able to survive the thawing process. Okay. And then, because with IVF, they basically match up an egg and a sperm and either they inject it or put it near it so that the egg is fertilized. Whereas IUI, they're just shooting for the moon, basically.
Yep.
And putting the sperm and hoping for the best. So, you know.
So it's going to be a smaller pool.
Yes.
Again, for IUI.
That's because, right.
So the IVF will be a larger pool to select from.
Yes. In Victoria, yeah. So that's why, personally, we went for the option of having an international donor because they have really big lists because they source them from...
What kind of difference are you talking in numbers? Like
we had... just trying to think, we had probably about maybe 30 or 40 to choose from, which is a decent amount of profiles to sort through.
Yeah.
And they still have the same rules of they can only have, you know, 10 families.
Yeah.
But then there is that question mark as to whether in other countries then they can, you know, have families with or other families in other countries. So there's always those question marks, whereas in Victoria, in Australia, it's very much regulated.
Now, there's one quite important thing to talk about when it comes to anonymous donors, and that's how they're dealt with on birth certs. So on birth certs, I believe there's a code that's placed in your birth cert.
Yes.
Which basically allows your child to get in touch with births, deaths and marriages, and they can instigate... communication.
Absolutely.
Or they can ask both parties if they want to have communication. They can find out some more about their lineage.
Yes.
Which I think is wonderful, actually.
It is.
Because it's, I know that I'm obsessed with understanding where I came from.
Yes.
So, you know, to deny somebody that, I think is, it's just,
no,
it's better to be able to give them the option.
It absolutely is. So on the birth certificate, it's actually called an addendum. So that's put at the bottom of, so that's the only thing that you see on the front of the certificate. In Victoria, you're put as mother and parent. So unfortunately, you can't have mother and mother, but, you know, it's language and labels. But yeah, so there's...
And it's better than nothing.
It's better than nothing. Absolutely. Not complaining. So there's the addendum where, so when a child turns 18, they can find out where their donor comes from. So we can still, even though we've gone through Queensland, our child can still access records once they turn 18, should they see fit to. So,
and importantly, it's through a third party. So
yes.
It's not directly. And
no.
The donors understand this
yes.
when they undertake
absolutely.
Their donation,
yeah.
Which I think is great.
Can donors choose not to be contactable in the future? Or is it like if you're going to donate,
anymore.
That's it?
Not in Australia.
Not anymore. Yeah, it used to be, but no, not anymore. They need, there's that transparency. And I think that that's a really good thing.
And that's probably why, again, the lists are shorter than they used to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, no, that was important for us. I mean, we've got, and that's the other thing too, between local clinics and international clinics is that it's big business overseas. So we have a 30-page document with all sorts of information about our donor. So that was important for us, even though we've gone an anonymous route, to be able to actually answer questions. So there's quite a few questions that we can answer. So if they come up, we can, you know, give a lot more than just basic information.
Yeah.
So we sort of felt that was the best of both worlds.
So you pretty much know everything about them except their name, their address, and what they look like.
Well, we do know what they look. We have a photo of our donor from when he was a child.
Yes. So you can do that.
Yeah.
This is another thing.
Yeah.
You can request for a child picture of
yes.
the donor, but not an adult one. Right.
Well, depending on which clinic. So the fertility clinic we used in Queensland, they use two main ones out of the US. One will only provide a baby picture. One will provide a baby picture and an adult picture.
Okay.
So it just depends on which sperm clinic that you go through. So,
okay.
you know, if that's important too. I mean, I think it's nice to be able to see what they look like or looked like. So, yeah.
I think it's great. So after the IUI, there is the option of IVF. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if... And usually people will give IUI a go, first of all, and then they could be declared as medically infertile. Mm-hmm. In order to get the IVF.
Yes.
It's not set in stone that that is the case, but sometimes there can be grounds to get that rebate for
absolutely.
IVF.
Yeah.
And IVF is a much more involved process.
Absolutely.
You've got a higher chance because the egg is fertilized outside of the body.
Yes.
And then they insert it and yeah. then they wait for the magic to happen.
It's interesting because last month we had one of the fertility clinics coming in and speak, and a lot of the statistics that they have, I think, is for the general population, and that includes same-sex couples. So I actually posed the question to them of whether they'd be interested in separating their data because, you know, for a cohort like same-sex attracted women who are often socially infertile as opposed to medically infertile, our success rates would be quite different.
Yeah, they would, wouldn't they?
Mm. So
yeah, because if we were in a heterosexual, if we're fertile in a heterosexual relationship, we'd be pregnant already.
That's right. You wouldn't be accessing the service.
Yeah, yeah, that would be interesting, actually. Mm.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You are indeed listening to Joy 94.9. Her voice is here on your Monday night. And we're talking to Fiona from PLP and... having a bit of a giggle. So after explaining all things IUI, IVF,
home
and talking a lot about mucus and
sperm
yes.
Jizz in general. General jizz.
Talk a bit about some more formal things, the legal side of things, which is very important. And there have been quite a few changes in the last couple of years, good changes. And yeah, so what's the situation in your case, for example? So you're obviously the birth mother.
Yes.
But your partner, what in what position is she in?
So on the birth certificate, I'm listed as mother because I was Henry's birth mother, and Kate is listed as parent. Mm-hmm. So she has the same rights that I do. There's no difference in that regard. Where with the changes that they brought in to pensions and Centrelink, I got the paid maternity leave payment, and Kate got dad and partner pay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's really
that's
good.
That's cool.
So
what's that, 2 weeks?
2 weeks, yeah.
So you didn't have to double ditch?
No, absolutely not. So and when I returned to because I returned to work, it meant that I could then, because Kate was then staying at home, so she could take over the remainder of the maternity pay as well. So that meant that, you know, It supplements our income, which is fantastic that we now have access to that. So pretty much there's not a lot of difference in terms of rights as far as anything that you'd think of. So as medical schooling, Kate can make decisions just as much as I can, which I think's fantastic.
Do you know when that change happened? Because that hasn't always been the case in the past, has it? People had to, if they wanted those rights, had to spend a lot of money on getting... parenting agreements drawn up, basically legal documents to give them rights. So
it's
fantastic that that's now been fixed.
I'm not exactly sure when that legislation passed. It was during Gillard's term as Prime Minister when she made all those changes to remove a lot of the restrictions and red tape for same-sex attracted people, and that's when the changes for Centrelink and tax and all those sorts of things that you could actually, you know, be registered as a de facto partner even though we don't have marriage equality. We've got almost everything but. So, you know, in terms of if you get comparative, even though the US has marriage equality, they don't have a lot of those legal rights in terms of parenting that we have. So, and I believe that Victoria is going through the process of allowing same-sex adoption. We still don't have that right. So if you wanted to go through the process of adoption, you can't. In our case, we don't have to because Kate can be listed on the birth certificate, which is great. But yeah.
If a couple does want to adopt, say, mm-hmm. I mean, they might just want to adopt from the outset, or they might go through the different processes and IVF and not be able to conceive.
Yep.
Is that one of the things that you
talk about
and give advice to people at PLP? Because
absolutely.
You can't adopt as a couple, only one.
No, but you can get permanent fostering. So, you know, if you weren't able to conceive or you wanted to look into fostering is a wonderful option yep. for kids that need loving parents. So you can, as a couple, permanently foster a child. You can't adopt a child as a same-sex couple. You can only adopt as a single at the moment.
So you can adopt as a single?
Yes. So basically you have more rights to permanently foster, because then you could have those, you know, schooling, medical rights, as opposed to being able to adopt, which seems a bit Irish, backwards, but it is. You know, so.
All right. No offence to our Irish friends.
No, slip of the tongue, awkward.
You're all so mean to me.
Anyway, excuse me, marriage equality. Yes. Excuse me. Thank you, May 22nd. Yeah, no, but it does seem a little bit odd yes. that you can permanently foster and you can't adopt.
Yes.
And a single person can adopt.
Yes.
You know, just it doesn't seem right.
Yeah. No. So fingers crossed that legislation gets passed relatively soon.
And it is something that the state government committed to addressing.
Yes.
So, yeah, it still hasn't happened yet. But
no. But, I mean, we've got much more rights than our, for example, our Queensland counterparts. So we had brunch with a gorgeous couple of friends of ours that are down from Brisbane, a lovely gay couple, and, you know, desperately want kids. And their rights have been stripped in Queensland. Mm. So the Newman, so their rights to adopt were brought in, and then the Newman government took that away, which, you know, is heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. And as same-sex attracted women, we are fortunate for the simple fact that, you know,
we have a womb,
you know, and my heart does go out to those
absolutely.
That want kids and can't go down that road. And so, you know, there is options like co-parenting, surrogacy, you know, as well. But again, that can get
so
messy
expensive.
And expensive. And
that's a mortgage right there.
Absolutely.
You know, and what I can't believe is that, you know, our brothers are just not afforded any opportunities at all. Yet they're willing to commit so much money to do this process, and people can't see that as commitment.
No.
And it just drives me spare. And it drives me spare.
The only media attention it gets is the negative media attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that,
again, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But really, it shows that this issue should be addressed on a federal level and not state level.
Absolutely.
The law, like this
it needs
here,
to be ironed out. Definitely.
Like it's ridiculous, really.
It is. Well, on the topic of marriage equality, one thing that absolutely gets my goat is the opponents to marriage equality doing the whole hands in the air, think of the children. And it's like,
oh my God.
Are you for real? We already have rights as parents. Mm. We have children. Hello, you know. Yeah.
So we're not sociopaths. We can look after children.
Exactly right.
Yeah. I think all the stuff that came up in the last couple of weeks as a response from some of the conservative politicians is just so ridiculous.
Oh.
I don't even want to talk about Barnaby Joyce because that's just...
But don't even say that name.
No.
The only name worse than that is Corey Bernardi.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm sorry, but that's the only name worse.
But it was actually one good thing that came out of all these ridiculous comments was that Penny Wong finally got a bit loud, and I think she got really annoyed with Eric Abetz and what he said. I read an article, and I think the message was like, "Hello, we already have kids."
Yes,
and it's really and the only thing you're telling our kids is that they're not worth as much as other kids because their parents can't get married. So if they're so worried about the health and well-being of these kids, then why not make a situation where these kids can have exactly the same situation as other kids and don't have to feel ashamed or whatever they want to imply there of their parents and feeling that they're not the same as other parents.
Absolutely. So. It's ludicrous to me. I cannot understand the rationale that they preach about think of the children. Because two loving parents, regardless of their gender, regardless of their sexual orientation.
Oh, because remember, you're going to make them gay, and that's a bad thing. As far as they're concerned, that's a bad thing. And you're propagating this filth.
My parents raised me straight, and look how well that turned out.
There you go.
I feel like a lot of in terms of the political atmosphere here with marriage equality and, you know, people bringing kids into it, I feel like it just always seems to fall on Penny Wong. Like in the last week or two, it's fallen on Penny Wong. There was a thing a couple of years ago where Joe Hockey, you know, spoke out against marriage equality while Penny Wong was sitting like two people down from him. It was like one of the most just disgusting, awful things I've ever seen. And like, she was her usual self, who, you know, responded eloquently and like keeps her cool about it. Whereas
moral high ground.
Oh, if that was me, I just would go out like absolutely nuts about it.
You would have gone for the jugular.
Yeah, so, I mean, we all know that things need to change, but it just, yeah, can't fall on the same people. And there was the, there was that awful ad that some, like, family group tried to air in March on SBS during the Mardi Gras coverage as well. Yeah, I just don't know how they keep getting away with this.
I think it's ignorance. I'm not trying to be.
It's both. It's ignorance and innocence.
Yes, that's what I mean. They just don't know.
Yeah, in fairness, like even looking at the yes and the no campaign in Ireland, you know, like a lot of the no campaigners, you know, they had a voice, and a lot of a lot of what they were saying in their heads was valid, and some of the stuff they're saying, you know, they have a point. You know, it's always good to have a female and a male. Granted, yeah, we've all got brothers and sisters and uncles and various other men in our lives. Like, there's very few lesbians that have absolutely no men in their lives.
Yes. So, what about single parents? Does that say that their families are invalid? And
it's an absolute slap in every single parent's face.
It is. But it is a lot of the time innocence.
Yes.
Where they just haven't been exposed to it, so they don't see it as something real.
No.
And then you get the ignorance, where people are exposed, they are educated, and just make stupid decisions and
just awful bigoted comments.
Yeah.
Look, Fiona, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me
tonight. You've provided a lot of information, and it's great. I'd encourage anybody. Tonight's topic isn't going to apply to everybody, obviously. Not everyone's
in a position right
at this moment, looking to start a family, but
even if they're after information, always welcome to come along.
So just remind us again of the times that it's on.
Sure. So it's the third Tuesday of every month, which can change depending on room availability. Generally, that's when it is. But if you're on the Facebook page, then that's the most current we do events. So you search PLP Vic on Facebook, or you can go to our website, which is plpvic.com, and connect with us there.
Great.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.